Welcome our new friends to Alcoholics Anonymous, especially Catherine and I think Catherine and Kayla, they on in too. But welcome all of you to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Either welcome for the first time or welcome back home if you're anything like me. And I want to assure you that the program works and it works well. And I'm going to talk real fast because I got a long, long story, but I got to shorten it up a lot. All right. So let's see where I can cut it off. I walked into the Salvation Army Harbor Light Center in downtown LA on Skid Row on February 7th of 1987, more dead than alive. I went in there. I didn't go in there to get sober. I don't know about y'all, but I went in there because I owed a whole bunch of people money. I owed a whole lot of people money. I had nowhere to go. Nobody wanted to take me. Well, everybody had kicked me out. I wasn't paying my bills. I wasn't making it to work on time. I wasn't keeping my word, you know, the little stuff that I don't know why it bothers people so much. And I went into this place because they said that they would let me sleep for a week and they wouldn't tell anybody where I was. Two of my brothers had just been in there. I don't know how they were able to do intake on me. I stank so much. I've been in the car for 2 weeks and I hadn't shaved, showered, brushed my teeth, combed my hair, anything. They sent me up to this room and they told me I could sleep for a week. They called it detoxing. And then they sent me down to this thing they called an AA meeting. I sat in the front row at that AA meeting because I was what they called new. And a tall white dude with a beard was standing at the podium. He was in a suit and tie looking incredibly lame to me. He looked a lot like I look right now. And he was holding on to this book, right? He had this book in his hand. And he was pounding on the podium and he said, if you want what I have, you'll get this Bible that's up here on this podium. You'll read it from the beginning and your life can change. And I looked at this dude and I thought to myself, man, you are lame. I don't want nothing you got. But then I had a real quick second thought. I thought, wait a minute, this dude is probably, I know he's not spending the night here at the Salvation Army Harbor Light Center like I am. I know he's got a car because nobody walked down Skid Row this time of night. He probably got a home that he's going to, and he might have a couple of women up in there. So I thought maybe I want a little bit of what this guy's got. I asked him to be my sponsor. He bought me that book. He said, read it from the beginning, and your life can change. And I looked at that Bible, and it said Alcoholics Anonymous on the front of it. And I'm thinking, what kind of Bible is this? And I opened it up, and it said, there is a solution. I got my first message of hope. But I'm a real sharp guy. I said, I'm going to go up to this room and I'm going to speed read this book all tonight and I'm going to get A and AA, right? And so I went up to my room to read it and I got to the part in the doctor's opinion where it said, the only hope for the chronic alcoholic is total abstinence. And you lost me right there. See, because I know what abstinence means. You can't slide big words by me like that. I know what total abstinence means. And who does that? Who wants to do that? Why would anybody want to do that? Why the bait and switch? I thought you guys were going to teach me how to just drink wine with my meal, not that heavy, that hard liquor, because I always throw up and black out on that, you know, and stay away from the hard stuff, that other stuff that was my real problem. I thought you were going to teach me how to hold on to a job, pay my bills, maybe keep a girlfriend or, you know, stuff like that. But instead, you're talking total abstinence and you lost me right there. And I'd have walked out of that rehab right then and there on the spot. I didn't have anywhere to go. So a month later, they gave us a weekend pass. I took my two biggest friends and we went down to this place called 9604 South Figueroa. That's an Alano club down in South Central LA, an AA meeting. We went to that noon meeting and then we opened the door to that meeting. It was a hot day. And I opened the door to that meeting and got hit with a wall of laughter and it terrified. So I don't know about you guys, but by the time I got to you, wasn't nobody laughing out loud the way I was drinking and using. It wasn't no laughter, wasn't no joking, you know, and it scared me. But I looked and it was a bunch of old timers hugging and shaking hands and laughing. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Looked on the other side of the room, a bunch of guys, cool looking guys. They're hugging and shaking hands and laughing. I didn't like the hugging part, but I'm like, okay. Then I look at the far end of the room and it was some really good looking women. I'm like, okay, maybe we could do this. So we went in to the only seats that were available, which were at the back of the room, right? It was a long bench. And later on, I found out they called it death row. And me and my two big friends are sitting on death row. And I look to my left and there's the coffee pot. Big silver coffee pot. Looked like it was glowing like Aladdin's lamp. And man, I wanted some of that coffee. next to it, a plate piled high with cookies. Not that cheap 99-cent store stuff. Looked like Oreos, the good stuff. And man, I wanted some of those cookies. But see, it was a crowd of people standing over there laughing and joking by the coffee pot. There was a guy standing behind the counter. And I thought to myself, what if I walk over there and pour a cup of coffee and they ask me for a quarter? See, I don't have it. What if I go over there and pick up a cookie and they ask me for a nickel? See, I don't have that either. The only thing I had was that dirt, when I came to you guys, was that dirty, nasty, filthy suit that I went to that rehab in, and they took that from me and threw it away. It was so nasty and stinky. And I don't know how this old timer lady read my mind. I don't even know how she figured out what I was, that I was new. But she came through the crowd of people all the way to the back of the room, the death row, and I guess she didn't want to embarrass me. She put her mouth right next to my ear and she whispered. She said, "Baby, go over there and get you some of that coffee. Go over there and get you some of those cookies. Take all you want, it's free." And then she smiled and winked at me. And I fell in love with you guys because of the kindness of strangers. See, I didn't know what they were talking about at that podium that day, that mental obsession, physical allergy, all that stuff. But I don't know about you guys, man, but wasn't nobody being kind to me by the time I got to you. Wasn't nobody offering me something for nothing. And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous that day, and I started doing everything you asked me to do. I started volunteering for everything. I was mopping floors and setting up meetings. I was cleaning ashtrays. I was volunteering for everything in the hall, and then eventually I was going on panels to prisons, and I was taking panels down on Skid Row. I came to you in February of 1987. In November of 1987, my two older brothers, Ralph and Ronald, along with our good friend Strange, came up with the idea for the Never Too Early Bigfoot Workshop. It was 13 of us around my mom's dining room table early on a Sunday morning, and my mom got up to go to church that morning, and she almost cried. She was so happy you had brought three of her sons back to her. See, I have five brothers, and all six of us were drinking and using on my mom just 2 years before that, and she had had a nervous breakdown and almost died. And now three of her sons are sitting here going through the Big Book in her house early on a Sunday morning. Then on December 25th, 1987, my baby brother came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And right now, I have three brothers, one with 40 years, one with 39, and one with 38. Right now in this fellowship. And man, 1987 was a great year in the White household. And we started working the steps exactly as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life took off. I started, and see, I didn't know it. I had come to you on a real high bottom. I had a real good work history still. So I started making money real fast. I got jobs. I had a good work history still. Got good jobs, making money real fast. Got a girlfriend, of course, real fast in AA. We move in together within 2 weeks, a classic AA romance. He has a son. I got a ready-made family. I'm a better dad to my alcoholic father has ever been. My mom was so thrilled you had brought three of her six, four of her six sons back to her. She opened her house up to Alcoholics Anonymous every Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. If you were in Los Angeles and you were in AA, you knew to come to Miss White's house if you had nowhere else to go. We were immersed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And how could it get better than that? Well, it did. And the richest man in California, a guy named Eli Bro, handpicked me to bring his company back from Atlanta to Los Angeles. Now I got a home in Atlanta, a home in LA, and less than 2 years sobriety going forward. I'm flying back and forth every 2 weeks. I'm making six figures, six departments, 250 employees. How could it get better than that? Well, it got better. My girlfriend got pregnant. An AA miracle. Why is that a miracle? I had barebacked it all my life. I didn't think I could have any kids. Now my girlfriend gets pregnant, and I have my own daughter, Angela Marie White. And the best thing I've been from that day to this is a father here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And don't let the life that AA gave you get in the way of your AA life. Don't let the life that AA gave you get in the way of your AA life. Bill puts it differently. He says if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and working with others, he won't be able to survive certain trials and low spots ahead. And if he can, he'll drink. And if he drinks, he'll die, and all hope will be lost indeed. What did that look like in my life? Well, my wife thought she saw our daughter have a, oh. First of all, what that looked like in my life is I'm working in Atlanta. I'm flying back and forth to LA, every 2 weeks. I don't have time to go to meetings. I'm too busy and I got too much going on. I got a sponsor in LA while I'm in Atlanta. I have a sponsor in name only who I haven't called in years. I'm no longer working the steps because I'm not in every twirly big book workshop anymore. I'm not taking panels down on Skid Row anymore, and I'm not going on panels to prisons anymore. I'm not doing any of the things in Alcoholics Anonymous that had gotten me all the things that Alcoholics Anonymous had got me. Don't let the life they gave you get in the way of your AA life. Then my wife thought she saw her daughter have a seizure. That was the trials that Bill talked about. We took her to Children's Hospital. They gave her medication was not supposed to be given to a child that young. It started eating her kidneys away. My daughter is being eaten alive from the inside. We're back and forth to the hospital for 4 months, begging them to switch the medication. You can't just stop a seizure medication or you'll cause seizures. They wouldn't do it. My baby would be hugging me. She's 4 years old, and all she knew, she would say, "Daddy, tummy hurts." She didn't eat for 4 months, and she's hugging me and looking at me like, because I'm her hero, and she thought I could fix anything, and I couldn't do it, and I'm helpless. And I said, enough of this. Took her to Cedars-Sinai, best hospital in LA. They took one look at her, and they said, "We have to intubate her. She's in too much pain." They put her in an induced coma for 3.5 weeks. All of AA gathered around, all the church people with my mom, all of our family. We were not alone one single minute of that 3.5 weeks that we lived at that hospital. I started praying again. See, I'd stopped praying too, guys. Now I'm praying, "God, take my life, save my daughter." It looked like my prayers were answered. Doctors came out, said, "We figured out what's wrong with your daughter. We just have to do exploratory surgery." I said, "Do it." They opened her up. When they opened her up, they killed her. When they killed her, it felt like God left me. And I totally shut down. I never went back to that dream job one day after that. I don't, they kept paying me. I don't even know how. And they made it to the funeral. I never called them, never. I'm a cautionary tale here in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, we know what to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous when we have tragedies. We go at the podium and talk till they drag us off of it. What we do is we call a sponsor or call sponsees. What we do is we go to meetings and we set up meetings or mop floors. What we do is we sit in the middle of the herd so you can love us back to life. You lean into the fellowship, and me and my wife could do nothing but lean back and shut down. I couldn't hear you guys. And I lasted 11 months like that. I was so angry. All I could think is, fuck you, God. What kind of God would allow a little girl to be tortured the last 4 months of her life, nothing but agony, and then to die a horrible death like that? And I wrapped that anger around me like a warm blanket on a cold day, and I lasted 11 months like that. And I went to a bar and I drank. When I went to that bar and I drank, it came rushing back at me how bad of an alcoholic I was. I'd done so many outside issues, I'd forgotten how bad of an alcoholic I was. And I only drank for 2 weeks. Then she came in the bar. You know her, short skirt, long legs, low-cut dress, booming, gorgeous face, tilted her head and gave me that look. And I tilted my head right with her and gave her my four-word interview that I always did. "Do you get high?" She said, "Yes." I was off and running doing what I really wanted to do and what I really knew I couldn't do. And I only did that for 2 weeks. Then it was the anniversary of my baby's death. And I said, "I need to see God. God needs to tell me some things. He needs to talk to me." And I wanted to be back with my baby, which is the last place I had been happy. I took a bunch of pills and committed suicide. I was pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital, and God wouldn't let me die. He pulled me back. The second worst day of my life is when I came to, and instead of looking into the face of God, I thought I woke up and I thought I was going to be looking into the face of God. Instead, I was looking in the face of my mom, and then my brothers, and then all of you guys, all the people that love me, and I'm ashamed, and I'm humiliated, and I'm angry, and I don't have my baby, and I don't have my sobriety. I don't have anything at all, and was I to know what the next 16 years were going to be like, I'd have tried to commit suicide all over again. It took me 16 years to make it back to you guys. The first 5 or 6 years was spent not holding my family together. And I tried to come back to you guys. I said, "I'm going to sneak back to Alcoholics Anonymous," because I was so worried about what you guys thought about me. New friends, all we want you to do is come all the way in, sit all the way down, and get hold of this thing. We're not thinking what you think we're thinking. I used to think they're saying, "Why is here? He comes again. Why can't he be like his brothers? If he wanted to stay sober, he'd do it." What, you know, all those different things, and we're not thinking that at all, guys. We just love you and want you to grab hold of this thing. But it dominated me, and I couldn't get this thing. And I tried to sneak back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I would go to meetings where nobody knew me. I would go in the meetings late so I wouldn't have to raise my hand as new. I would leave meetings early so I wouldn't have to take chips. And I would be at meetings, but not in meetings and not getting any of the benefits of the meetings. And I'm
Five
relapsing
minutes,
now.
please.
Thank you. I'm relapsing over and over and over again. Then I got to put some of this story. Then in 2009, God gave me glaucoma. Now I have 0% vision in my right eye, 30% vision in my left. Now I'm on the county and I'm getting $200 a month, $200 worth of food stamps, and I become a low bottom drunk, selling plasma twice a week to make ends meet. And ends ain't meet. And a mother is only as happy as their most unhappy child. And my mom didn't want me out there on the street, so she let me rent a room in her house. And in June 24th, 2017, my so-called girlfriend stole my mother's car out of her driveway again. And my baby brother pushed open the door to that room. And he said, "Where's mom's car?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "We have to leave my mother's house right now." And I felt like that was the absolute worst day of my life. And it turned out to be the absolute best day of my life. I made one right decision that day and went into that same rehab I'd been to twice in a 5-year period. And I was walking that day with my head down in that rehab, the very first day I was in there, because I hadn't looked any of you in the eye here. So I'm walking with my head down, and my sponsor, who had got me in the rehab, walked up on me and said, "Reggie, pick your head up. You're a child of God. You don't have a right to walk with your head down anymore." He said, "God wouldn't have put you through everything he put you through to leave you out here like this." And before I could stop myself, the words slid out of my mouth. I said, "Would you please take me through the steps?" And God, right then, right there, touched me and made a change in me. And all of a sudden, I stopped worrying about what people thought about me. And I no longer cared about that. And all I cared about was helping those 200 guys in that rehab. And God's pouring grace on me. And thank God that God doesn't need my permission to work in my life, because I was still cursing God on a daily basis. I walked out of that rehab in 90 days and walked into the Never Too Early Big Book workshop, because now I don't care what people think about me. And I was on the third step, and we were on the third step prayer on our knees, holding hands, doing that third step prayer together, me to a God that I had no belief could do anything for me. But I believe that you guys believe, and that was enough to start. God was continuing to pour grace on me. And then we got to the fourth step, and my brother Ralph has a saying. He drives home the point that the worst thing an alcoholic can have is totally justified anger. If you've been raped as a child, molested as an adult, if your 4-year-old baby has been tortured and killed and she did nothing to anybody. And what we say in that situation is, do you want to be right or do you want to be? Do you want to be right or do you want to be free? And this time I chose freedom and put God on that fourth step. And when I did, that thing started to look different. I realized God wasn't the one that gave my little girl the bad medication. That was a doctor's at Children's Hospital. I realized God wasn't the one that made the decision for my daughter to die. That was the doctor's at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. Okay, wait a minute. I prayed, "God, take my life, save my daughter." Well, when did God start working for me instead of me working for God? And there was the one big thing. What kind of God would only let me have my little girl for 4.5 years and rip her out of my life
2 minutes.
that? See, when I look at the world differently, the world looks back differently at me. And the way I prefer to look at it is this: that God held Angela Marie White in his arms before he put her on this earth. And he said, "Little girl, you are going to be tortured for 4 long months and die a horrible death. So what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to give you to a man that's going to love you every single day of your life. I'm going to give you to the best father in the world." And he gave her to me, my miracle baby that I didn't think I could have. And the way I prefer to look at it is this: not that God only let me have her for 4.5 years, but God allowed me to be a father for 4.5 years, the best 4.5 years of my life. I have so much more to tell you guys that I wish I had time to tell you guys. But what I will tell you is this: I'm bringing you a message of hope. Each one of you new people counting days, I want to let you know that God is not with his miracles yet, and he doesn't need your permission to work in your life. If you're sitting in these squares, you are the miracle today. Even you, Catherine, at one day, and even it was Kayla at 2 days. God is not done with you yet. My name's Reggie. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for allowing me.
Absolutely.